Before I say one word about the law, I want you to do something. Out loud. Right where you're sitting in the kitchen, in the recliner, in the truck, nobody's listening but you. Say this sentence. I'm not answering questions. Go on. Say it out loud. Now, if you actually said it, I want you to notice something. Not the words, the feeling underneath them. That little flinch, that tug in your chest that says, that was rude. That says I sound like I've got something to hide. Hold on to that feeling, because that feeling is the entire product. Every single question I'm about to walk you through was built to find that flinch in you and pull on it. Not one of them requires an answer. Not one of them is small talk. And if you're over 60, you were raised in a house where you answered a man in uniform politely, completely, and the first time he asked. That's not a character flaw, that's manners. That's how your mother raised you. It's also the exact thing that's being used against you. So here's what we're doing today. 8 questions, 8 answers. And I'm counting them down, starting with the one you're most likely to hear this month, and finishing with the one that has quietly put innocent people in prison. Number one on this list isn't really a question at all. It's a sentence officers say for one specific reason. To make sure your Miranda rights never kick in, when we get there, I'll show you why it works. And the 11 words that shut it down cold. Every answer I give you is short enough to memorize, polite enough to keep you safe, and backed by a real Supreme Court ruling. I'll name out loud so you can look it up yourself. Let's start counting. My name's Walter, and this channel exists for one reason: to hand you the rules nobody bothered to explain. Not the rules you're told on television. The actual ones, written down, decided by real courts. Quick note before we go further, and I say it every time because it matters. This is educational only. This is not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not your attorney. For your own situation, talk to a licensed attorney in your state, and laws vary from state to state, so check your own. What I'm giving you here is the general principle, the real cases behind it, and the words attorneys consistently recommend people have ready. All right, number 8. 8. Do you know why I pulled you over? You've heard it, probably more than once. Windows down, hands on the wheel, and the first thing out of his mouth is a friendly little riddle. Here's what that question actually is. It's an invitation to confess, phrased as small talk, because there are only 2 ways to answer it, and both of them help him. If you say, I suppose I was going a little fast, congratulations, you just gave a signed admission out loud before he's even written anything down. That sentence goes in the report. It shows up in traffic court when you try to fight the ticket and the judge reads your own words back to you. And if you say, no, I have no idea. Well, now he tells you the reason and he's lost nothing. That's not a conversation. That's a coin flip where only one side loses. Now, here's how I know this isn't just my opinion. The state of California decided this question was a problem and made it illegal to open with. Assembly Bill 2773 took effect on January 1st, 2024, and it requires an officer making a traffic or pedestrian stop to state the reason for the stop before asking questions related to the investigation. The one narrow exception is if withholding it is necessary to protect life or property from an imminent threat. Think about what that means. A state legislature looked at that one friendly question, looked at what it was doing to ordinary drivers, and banned it as an opener. Your answer, and it's 3 words, no, I don't. That's it. Say it calmly. Say it politely. Don't guess. Don't apologize. Don't offer a theory about your speedometer. No, I don't. Then you stop talking and let him do his job. 7, where are you coming from tonight? Where are you headed? This one feels like the friendliest question on the whole list. It sounds like a neighbor making conversation while the computer runs your plate. It isn't. It's an evidence-gathering question, and it does 3 jobs at once. First, it builds what's called reasonable suspicion. If you say you're coming from a friend's house and he thinks that neighborhood is interesting, that's now a fact in his report. Second, it locks you into a timeline. Anything you say becomes a statement he can compare against something later, and if the details don't line up perfectly, that inconsistency is written down as deception. Third, And this is the one people never see coming. It takes time. And time is the whole ballgame. In 2015, the Supreme Court decided Rodriguez versus United States. An officer pulled a man over, wrote him a warning, and then held him 7 or 8 extra minutes waiting on a dog. The court said no. A traffic stop has a mission, checking your license, your registration, your insurance, running warrants, writing the ticket. Once that mission is done, or once the officer detours from it in a way that adds time, the stop becomes unlawful, unless he has developed separate reasonable suspicion. Read that again, because it's the most useful sentence in this whole video. The question is whether the detour adds time to the stop. Every minute you spend explaining your afternoon is a minute he isn't writing, and a chatty driver is the cheapest way in the world to legally stretch a stop because you volunteered it. Now, the senior bend on this one, and it's real. Officers are trained to look for confusion. If you're 68, it's late. The lights are in your mirror, your heart is going, and you fumble the details of your own evening where you stopped. What time you left that fumbling is not recorded as he was nervous. It's recorded as subject gave inconsistent statements regarding his travel. You don't owe him your day. Your answer: officer, I'd rather not talk about where I've been. Am I being detained or am I free to go? Polite, complete. And it does something clever. It moves the clock. It puts the burden back on him to either finish the stop or explain why he's still holding you. 6. How much have you had to drink tonight? Notice the shape of that sentence. He didn't ask whether you've been drinking. He asked how much. The drinking is baked into the question as an assumption, and your brain wants to fill in the blank with a number. And here's the trap that catches good, honest, cautious people. They think a small number is a safe number. Just one glass of wine with dinner, 2 beers hours ago. That is not a defense. That's an admission of consumption in your own voice at the roadside. And it is now the officer's justification for everything that comes next: the field sobriety test, the roadside breath device, all of it. He no longer needs to explain why he suspected anything. You told him. Now let me give you the piece almost nobody knows, and it's important. You might be thinking, he never read me my rights, so none of this counts. That is not how it works. In Berkemer versus McCarty, decided in 1984, the Supreme Court held that the roadside questioning of a driver during a routine traffic stop is generally not custodial interrogation for Miranda purposes. Traffic stops are brief and public, the court said, so they don't carry the pressure of a station house interrogation, which means the officer does not have to warn you first, and your answers at the window are generally admissible against you. In that very case, the driver told the trooper he'd had 2 beers. That sentence came in as evidence. There's no warning, there's no bell, there's just your open window. And the senior bend here is the cruelest one on this list. Because when an officer is looking for impairment, he's looking for a specific set of signs: unsteady balance, slow responses, watery eyes, difficulty following instructions, trouble on a one-leg stand. Now think about arthritis. Think about a hip replacement. Think about vertigo or hearing loss or the 7 prescriptions on your kitchen counter or being genuinely startled at 11 at night. An ordinary 70-year-old body can produce nearly every sign on that checklist, stone cold sober. Your answer: officer, I'm not going to answer questions about that. That's the whole thing. Don't say just one. Don't joke. Don't say not enough to matter. One more piece of practical honesty, because I won't leave you half informed. Refusing a chemical test after a lawful arrest is a separate matter from refusing to talk. Nearly every state has an implied consent law attached to your driver's license, and the penalties for refusal vary a great deal from state to state. That is a decision with real consequences, and it's a question for a licensed attorney in your state. What I'm telling you is narrower, and it's the part that's the same everywhere. You are never required to narrate your evening to a police officer. Quick word, and then we get to the ones that really matter. Everything in this video, every phrase, every case, the exact wording, the follow-up lines for when an officer pushes back, I put into a plain English field manual called Know Your Rights. What to say when police stop you? It's built to live in a glove box or a nightstand drawer, not a law library. Big print, no legalese. If you want it, the link's in the description below this video. Now, number 5. And this is where the questions stop being about the ticket. 5. Is there anything in the car I should know about? This is a fishing expedition wearing a friendly hat. There's nothing specific in it. No accusation, no allegation. It's a wide open net, and it's designed to do one of two things. If you say yes, even about something completely legal, even something you're proud of, you've just handed him a subject. And if you hesitate, if your eyes go to the glove box for half a second while you think, that half second gets written down. In the report, it becomes, subject appeared nervous and glanced toward the center console. I want to be very clear about who this question is built for. It is built for the honest person. A person with something to hide has an answer ready. It's the retired school teacher with a clean record who freezes because she's trying to be thorough. She's mentally inventorying her own trunk. Is the pocket knife her husband left in there a problem? What about the prescription bottle in her purse that isn't hers, the one she picked up for her sister at the pharmacy? Honesty makes you slow. Slow reads as guilty. And notice what this question is really doing. It's a warm-up. It's setting the table for number 4. Your answer? No, and I don't consent to any searches. 2 pieces. The first closes the door. The second nails it shut before he can even reach for the handle. 4. You don't mind if I take a quick look, right? There it is. The big one. And listen to how it's built. It isn't, may I search your vehicle? It's phrased in the negative, you don't mind, so that the easy, agreeable, polite answer is the one that surrenders everything. The natural human response to, you don't mind, right, is a nod. He's counting on the nod. Here's what a lot of people get wrong. They think, well, if he's asking, he must have the right to look anyway, so I might as well be cooperative. The exact opposite is true. If he had the legal authority to search, he wouldn't be asking. The question exists because he doesn't have it. Consent is the shortcut around the warrant. And 2 Supreme Court cases explain exactly why this works so well on decent people. In Schneckloth versus Bustamante, 1973, the court held that consent to a search is valid if it's voluntary under the totality of the circumstances, and specifically, that the government does not have to prove you knew you had the right to refuse. Your ignorance of your own right does not invalidate the consent. It just makes it easier to get. Then, in Ohio versus Robinette, 1996, the court went a step further and held that an officer is not required to tell you that you're free to go before asking for consent to search. So you can be sitting there, warning already in hand, technically free to drive away, and legally he doesn't have to say a word about it. Put those two together and you get the reality on the American roadside. Nobody has to tell you that you can say no, and nobody has to tell you that you could have left. And once you say yes, it's largely over. You can't unring that bell. A search you consented to is very difficult to challenge later because your lawyer can't argue the officer had no right to be in there you invited him. Your answer? And say it exactly. I do not consent to any searches. Not, I'd rather you didn't. Not, do you have to? Not, I guess, if you need to. Those are soft. Soft gets written down as consent. Now, what if he pushes? Because he might. You may hear, if you've got nothing to hide, why won't you let me look? Or, I can just get a dog out here. You do not argue. You do not explain. You repeat the same sentence and add one. I do not consent to any searches. Am I free to go? Say it the same way the third time as the first. Flat, calm, identical. And remember, Rodriguez, if he's keeping you there with no reasonable suspicion, waiting on a dog, that delay is exactly what the Supreme Court said the Fourth Amendment doesn't tolerate. That's not a fight you win at the roadside. It's a fight your lawyer wins later, but only if you didn't consent. 3 mind if I step inside for a minute? We've left the car now. This one happens at your front door, and it's the question I most want the people in this audience to be ready for. Here's the setup. and it's usually completely innocent at the start. Your daughter three states away couldn't reach you for a day and got worried. Or a neighbor saw your porch light on at odd hours. Somebody calls for a welfare check. And now there are two officers on your steps, and they're being kind about it, and one of them says, "We just want to make sure you're okay. Mind if we come in and take a look around?" Everything in you says yes. You want to prove you're fine? You want to show them the house is in order, because underneath this, for a lot of people over 60, there's a much bigger fear than a criminal charge. It's the fear of somebody deciding you can't manage on your own anymore. So understand exactly where you stand, because the Supreme Court answered this recently and unanimously. The case is Coniglia versus Strom, decided May 17, 2021. A man in Rhode Island argued with his wife. She left, couldn't reach him by phone the next morning, and called police for a welfare check. Officers came, spoke with him on the porch, and he agreed to go be evaluated at a hospital on the condition that they not take his firearms. Once he left, they entered the home and seized the guns anyway. The lower court said that was fine, calling it community caretaking, the idea that police do all sorts of non-criminal helping work, so entering to check on someone was reasonable. The Supreme Court reversed. Every single justice, Justice Thomas wrote that there is no freestanding community caretaking exception that lets officers search a home without a warrant. The court drew what it called an unmistakable distinction between vehicles and homes. So what does that leave? Warrantless entry into your home generally requires one of three things: a warrant, a true emergency that's exigent circumstances, like someone visibly injured inside or in immediate danger, or your consent. And here's the whole point. Of those three, consent is the only one they can get from you at your door with a polite question. In about 4 seconds, your answer, and it has two moving parts: "I'm all right, and I appreciate you checking. I'm not giving consent to come inside. I'll step out onto the porch and talk with you right here." Do you see what that does? It answers the actual concern they were sent to confirm you're alive and well, and stepping outside confirms it completely. It removes their reason to escalate, and it keeps the threshold of your home exactly where the Constitution puts it, closed. If someone genuinely needs help in there, that's a different situation entirely, and the emergency exception is real. But "come in and let us have a look around" is not an emergency. It's a request. Requests can be declined. Two, if you've got nothing to hide, why won't you just talk to me? Now we're at the two that ruin lives. And notice, this isn't a question about facts anymore. It's a question about your character. It's a lever, and the lever is shame. I need you to hear this clearly, because it's the thing most people in this country do not know, and it is not close to a gray area. Police officers are legally permitted to lie to you. In Frazier versus Cup, 1969, a detective falsely told a suspect that his cousin had already confessed. It wasn't true. The Supreme Court held that the deception did not, by itself, make the resulting confession involuntary. Officers can tell you a witness identified you. They can tell you your fingerprints were found. They can tell you they already know everything and just want your side. They can tell you that talking now will make it easier on you. So look at the sentence again. If you've got nothing to hide, why won't you talk? And understand, it's built on a promise that the law does not require anyone to keep, and the innocent person problem is not theoretical. The Innocence Project reports that among its exonerations, roughly 29% involved false confessions, nearly 1 in 3. These are people whose innocence was later established, and they had confessed, not because they were guilty, and not because they were foolish, because a human being, tired and frightened and told that cooperation is the way out, will eventually say what the room seems to want. You cannot talk your way out, you can only talk your way in. And I want to name the senior version of this specifically. The lever they're pulling on you isn't fear, it's decency. Your whole life you've been the person who helps, who doesn't make a fuss, who answers when spoken to. That's a good way to live, and I'm not asking you to change it. I'm asking you to notice that it is being aimed at you. Your answer: "I'm not answering questions. That's not an accusation of anything. It's just my answer." That second sentence is doing quiet work. It refuses the framing without picking a fight. You're not calling him a liar. You're simply declining to play a game where the only pieces on the board are yours. One, you're not under arrest. We just want to talk. Here it is, the one I promised you at the top. This isn't a question. It's a legal position being established out loud in front of you, and it's said kindly, which is precisely what makes it work. You're not in any trouble. You're free to go whenever you want. We're just trying to clear a few things up. Maybe. Would you mind coming down to the station? It'd really help us out. Every one of those sentences is doing the same job, keeping you out of custody. Because Miranda, the warning everybody in America can recite from television, only attaches to custodial interrogation. If you are not in custody, there is no warning, no lawyer prompt, nothing. Just a friendly conversation that is being documented. And then it gets worse in a way that genuinely shocks people. Salinas versus Texas, 2013. A man came to a police station voluntarily. He was not under arrest. No Miranda warnings. He answered questions freely for a while, and then, when asked about ballistics on his shotgun, he simply went quiet. Didn't say why, just stopped. At trial, the prosecution used that silence as evidence of guilt, and the Supreme Court let it stand because he had never expressly invoked the Fifth Amendment. The plurality was blunt about it. You don't claim the privilege by simply standing mute. Now pair that with Berguise versus Tompkins, 2010. That man sat nearly silent through about 3 hours of interrogation, then answered one question at the end. The court held that his silence had not invoked anything, because invoking the right to remain silent must be unambiguous. Silence alone doesn't do it. So put the whole trap together and look at how tight it is. If you talk, they use what you said. If you go quiet without saying the magic words, in a non-custodial conversation, they may be able to use your silence. And because they told you you're free to leave, none of it required a warning in the first place. There is exactly one way out, and it is verbal. You have to say it. Your answer, in two parts. First, am I free to leave? Ask it plainly. If the answer is yes, you leave. Not after one more question. Not after being helpful for another 2 minutes. You say thank you, and you go. If the answer is no, or if he dodges it, then you say this, and these are the 11 words. I'm invoking my right to remain silent. I want a lawyer. Then you stop, completely. Not one more sentence, not even a friendly one. Not, I'd just like to say I didn't do anything. Every word after those 11 is a word that undoes them. The one rule underneath all eight. 8 questions, 8 answers, and every single one of them runs on the same engine. Not one of those questions is about information. All 8 are about permission. Permission to search, permission to enter, permission to extend the stop, permission to build a report out of your own sentences. Every one of them is phrased as a favor between two reasonable adults because asking is legally cheaper than proving. And the answers all collapse into one line. If you remember nothing else from the last half hour, remember this. I'm not answering questions. I don't consent to any searches. And I'd like to speak with a lawyer. Say it with me one more time, because a phrase you've said out loud is a phrase you can find under pressure. I'm not answering questions. I don't consent to any searches. And I'd like to speak with a lawyer. That's it. 3 clauses. It fits on an index card in your wallet. It works at a window, at a door, and at a table in a station. And here is the golden rule that keeps you safe while you use it. And I will never say this video without saying this part. Comply physically. Assert your rights verbally. Fight it in court. If he tells you to step out of the car, you step out Pennsylvania versus Mims, 1977, says he can order that during a lawful stop. Hands visible, movement slow, no arguing, no lecturing him about case law, no reaching for anything without saying what you're reaching for. You never win a legal argument on the shoulder of a highway at night. That fight belongs in a courtroom, in daylight, with a lawyer standing next to you, and the only way to keep that fight winnable is to not hand away your rights before you get there. One more thing before you go, and it's the honest caveat. Some of this varies by state. Stop and identify laws are a good example. In Heibel versus 6th Judicial District Court of Nevada, 2004, the Supreme Court upheld a state law requiring a person lawfully detained on reasonable suspicion to state their name. Note how narrow that is. Nevada's law required only that he say his name, not hand over a license or any document, and it applied only because the officer already had reasonable suspicion. Roughly half the states have some version of that law, and they are not identical. So look up your states. 10 minutes with your own state's rule is worth more than anything I can tell you in general. If this was useful, subscribe. I put out one of these every week, and the next one goes deeper on the doorway because the front door is where the rules change most and where this audience gets pushed hardest. Specifically, the four words officers use to get past a threshold without a warrant and how a welfare check turns into a search of your home in under a minute. I'm Walter. Say the words out loud a few times this week. In the kitchen. Until the flinch goes away. Because the flinch is the only thing standing between you and the rights you already have. See you in the next one.